Hello and welcome to the Generic Foiling Podcast. Freddie here once more. This week we have finally managed to sit down with Army Armstrong. It's taken a good few weeks to get sorted. The man's been bouncing around the world like a jack-in-the-box, flitting between China, Hawaii and New Zealand, and we managed to catch up with him finally whilst he was over in Hawaii for the Molokai race. I think he's there doing some testing as well for a little while. We really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed it. Both of us, Liam and I, literally came off after chatting to Army and both said that was bloody good fun. So I think everyone will enjoy it. Fingers crossed. He is the type of character that we could break quite easily and get him to say some things that he probably shouldn't say. So that was exactly what we wanted to do and that was exactly the aim in the first place. We talk about everything. As always, it's not always foiling. It was a great bit of fun. I hope you all enjoy it. I'll see you all at the end. Army, welcome along to the podcast. Thank you for finally showing up. You are officially the latest person to have turned up to a podcast. But it's good because I'm already on my second beer.
Brilliant. So you'll be tired.
I'll be absolutely fine until I crash after about 45 minutes. So, yeah, welcome along. Where in the world are you at the moment? It's been a nightmare to try and sort of
you've been all
tie
over.
You down. Yeah, so where are you?
Yeah, sorry about that, guys. Yeah, I'm in Maui, Hawaii right now. We've just been paddling around the islands. We just did the race over to Molokai time. So, yeah, all good. It's been epic learning, as always, up here.
Did you take part in the race then, or what was your role?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yep. My role was to, basically beat Dave Kalama. That was
did you? Oh, God, I'm going to have to pull up the actual results. I did send them to Liam earlier, but I haven't got the app open now. How did you get on? How was it?
Yeah, the results are an interesting one. Not good. No, I was happy. Could have done better, could have done worse, as always. But, yeah, it's always technical with your line choice here and stuff like that. We were really excited. It's Oscar's first time, competing downwinding. So Oscar's one of our team riders from Aussie, who's a real great brand ambassador, just a great ambassador for the sport, actually. That's why, we love Oscar and have him involved, because he's just such a good dude. And, yeah, his first event, so he definitely had a challenging one. He probably could have got, a bit better result than he did, but first race, so he had a lot of nerves off the start. And
seventh is pretty good for Oscar.
Great result for him, on that front. But he was time-wise, he's been running a lot faster than that with the gear he's on, and it's really technical, these races here, in terms of your line, because once you get going, you kind of lose sight of most people around you. It's a big bit of ocean out there, 50-odd Ks, between the islands. And so you've got to find your own line, and different bits of water move at much different speeds. And he blew a start, so he lost sight of, the fast guys straight away. And his plan was to keep an eye on someone fast and, sort of track their line. He lost sight of everyone, so he had to find his own line. And that he did well, very well, considering that. And then he also dry docked himself on a reef at the finish line.
Oh, dear.
Which cost him a couple of minutes walking across the reef.
Oh. So.
Did you get a chance, because I know Olivia went out there a little bit earlier and done a bit of training over there. Did you get the chance to do the crossing before the actual race?
Yeah, well, I was hardcore into the downwind supping for years. So I've done it on sup, on the races about 7 or 8 times, that one, and I've foiled it a couple of times as well.
Oh, right.
So no, I knew where I was going. That's why I had a vaguely decent result.
And what, I mean, forgive our ignorance. Liam and I are both, neither of us completely privy to it, of that race. And it's not the biggest thing over here. Downwinding just isn't massive in the UK at all, even on the sup stuff. Yeah, but we look after, personally, we look after SIC. So I have some sort of an indication as to the idea behind it and the race behind it. One thing that stood out recently, looking at some of the information that's popped up about the race this year, was there's two main sort of channels guys were running, whether they were in sort of the deeper water or the slightly shallower water. Can you explain that a little bit? And
yeah, well, the waves move faster in the deeper water, so if you can tap into that energy, you're going to go a lot faster. You get the bigger swells run pretty fast down the main channel. but they're not running at the same angle that you want to be hitting. So you've got to be, you know, dropping in and then cutting hard right on them. So the wind's northeast and it's, you know, it's coming over your right shoulder most of the run. But usually on Molokai, it actually wraps on the last 10 miles down the island and you get a really nice run in. This year, the wind was a bit more northeast, which meant it was a little bit cross offshore coming down that side of the island, which made the bumps on the inside actually small and really slow. And the guys that stayed out wider definitely had a much faster run. And it was one of those years where if you stayed wide in the middle of the channel, you really got rewarded.
So, out wide being in the middle of the channel in the deeper water then?
Yeah, that's right. So you've got Maui here and Molokai over here. And Molokai is like a banana shape, basically. And so the coast that you see, you know, the southernmost point is you've got 10 miles to go once you hit that and it bends around. And so the tendency is to get across the channel, you know, and get to the island sort of thing. But actually when you get, you know, a few miles into it, you've got to turn down and banana with the shape of the island to get the fastest run. So, and that's where the fastest water
is. And is that where... Is that where Kane went and the top sort of lads? Is that their route?
Yeah, for sure. The top guys stay pretty wide. Yeah.
Is this something...
The water's moving faster out there.
Is this something that is a passion project for you, or is this something that you're doing strategically with Armstrong as a brand and a presence in this scene?
Strategically, if you want to pour money into a black hole. Basically we've done a ton of development with the downwinding since the start. I really got into foiling with the downwinding initially. I was sup racing and I just was loving the downwind thing, and we were, you know, I was kite foiling as well. And then I was like, yeah, let's do this downwind. You know, there was no let's, it was just me at the time on my own. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to do this downwind thing. And so I built myself some foils to try and downwind, and, you know, learned a lot in the process. Some were successful, some weren't, and had some great, you know, runs at the time. And 2017 finally figured it out and, you know, did some really, really good, you know, downwind missions here kind of before anyone else was really into it competitively. So I was racing my mates on the subs and they all kind of laughed a little bit at me, you know, on the foil board, you know, racing with them. And, you know, there was good bits and bad bits, but yeah, it's definitely a passion project. I mean, at this point downwinding, like you guys said, it's not a massive thing globally, but in Hawaii, it is actually pretty big because you get such great conditions in here. In Gorge, there's definitely a core crew doing it because you've got great conditions, and West Oz as well actually has a pretty core crew.
I think it's not just conditions, is it? It's also the logistical setup. Like, I'm assuming everybody over there that's got any disposable income has a boat. Deep sea fishing's already a big thing, so like to charter a boat's easy. It's kind of that as well, I guess.
Yeah, well, for the races between the islands, it is a logistical mission. With the Maui to Molokai, it's an easier channel. You don't have to have an escort boat for that one. They have a lot of really good people, escorting the race. The races organise it. But for the Molokai to Oahu, which is the big one, you know, in a couple of weeks, that one you do need a boat because it's a much hairier channel. It's more crosswind. It's harder to achieve. But most people here, you can downwind just doing a car shuttle. And there are a lot of wingers here downwinding too. That blew my mind this time on Maui, like how many wingers are shuttling up with cars and doing the downwind, because here the runs are so good. You're literally surfing a head high wave for 10 miles.
Over here, we don't have, I would say most of our conditions are more onshore than anything else. And most of the conditions over there cross shore. Is that part of the reason why it's not so, or it's not being as popular here?
Yeah, that's a big factor. You're bang on the money there. So, you know, the places, Tarifa's got a great spot because it's cross offshore and you can go down the coast. I'm not sure where else in Europe has great conditions for it. There must be places, but definitely the fact that there's a lot of cross shore spots is the key.
Yeah. It's just been such a funny, I don't know. The whole thing's just been quite comical over here because we see it blowing up in all these big places, and all the lads that you talk to, Jeremy and Oscar and James, and then you'd look at all the Maui lads, and obviously everybody over in Hawaii is downwinding. The Europe is such a huge industry for wing and for foil because of wing, but we don't have any of this downwinding stuff here. And so there's so much going on, but there's not actually much going on at the same time. It's just exactly. quite a strange one because everyone's talking about it, but I still, aside from maybe two or three people, I don't know anyone over here who's actually doing it and is doing it to a level where they're actually foiling as opposed to just flailing around in 30 knots worth of water. There's no one's really, I don't know, advertising it quite so much over here. Don't get me wrong, boards are selling, kit is selling, but...
Well, the reason why the kit's selling probably is because the downwind boards, the happy accident that happened is that they're epic for light wind winging. So
exactly that.
Basically, it means you can ditch the massive wings and massive foils for light wind winging, and you can go out and have a blad around in small conditions on your downwind board, and it's made that really fun and accessible. And it's kind of crazy because we're all going shorter and shorter and shorter with boards, which is great for the high-performance stuff, but... when you just want to get out there on a light wind day, people are kind of a little bit tired of paddling their sinker in when the wind dies, right? So it's nice to have that option of the bigger board. And I've been, you know, winging the downwind boards a lot, and it was kind of like, actually for me testing gear, it just opened up a whole nother, you know, amount of time where I could get on the water, especially in New Zealand where the wind's either howling or none. And so, yeah, the downwind boards we've been using a lot for winging, and I love them for that. But yeah, the downwind scene... up here, it's epic. It's just, you know, the conditions are good. It's a bit like Hood River. There's a really core crew, and the people that are into it are really passionate about it. So getting back to your original question, yeah, it's a passion project. But it's a real driver for learning, actually, because you are requiring maximum efficiency out of your gear and out of yourself and out of your board. And you're just learning, you know, so much about the gear. Whereas, you know, winging's a fantastic sport. Kite flying's a great sport. But when you're holding the wing or the kite, it's a whole nother element that makes dealing with the foil kind of, you're not removed from it, but it's just not as pure to understand what's happening with the foil. So for me, it's a great way to really learn.
I can see that.
Yeah, I find, just as a side note, I wanted to come back to the whether or not downwinding was actually the inspiration to start Armstrong, then I don't really know that story. Maybe it's something you've talked about in the past with others. But no, just to touch on what you were saying, I really value the fact that I've got to the stage where I can cross multiple disciplines, because there's certain techniques or maneuvers or like how aggressive or the way in which you carve or turn that you can only do with some of the disciplines that you can't do with others. Like I'd argue there's stuff I can do kite foiling. I could remove that and I can go prone foiling and it might be the most natural thing, or you can go downwind foiling and it might be the most natural thing, but there's shit I can do with a kite foil that I will never do without. Do you know what I mean? And I think that's really cool about the multiple disciplines, actually. I totally accept what you're saying in terms of learning specifically about how the foil's working, and especially in terms of energy pickup and efficiency. I learned the most about that because we don't have the access to the downwind and gear and conditions so much, but I do have access to a boat, and wake foiling was the thing for me where I was like, okay, I can consistently figure out how this foil is behaving at what part of the wave, how high I've got it, what my elevation's like, all the rest of it. But anyway, so was downwinding the inspiration to actually start Armstrong foils?
It was a big driver for me. Whether it was a big driver for me to make foils, so I was, you know, chasing, you know. But basically, I guess I was, you know, pretty competitive in the SUP scene. I did okay in the New Zealand, you know, tour. I was, you know, NZ champ for a couple of years in a row and whatever. And then, you know, chased the world. But I was, you know, in the early 40s at the point. And so, you know, got slightly disillusioned with being thrashed by the kids all the time. So I was like, right, I'm going to get on a foil and beat these guys, basically. Even though foiling wasn't an official class, I just was, you know, into it. And so, yeah, that was a big driver for me. So my first foils were all pretty much, I made a couple of kite foils as well, because I'd been into kite foiling for a long time at that point already, but just as a fun basic level, and breaking kite foil gear. So that's, you know, breaking all my kite foil gear all the time is why I got into, you know, tinkering with making foils, because I like all the stuff all breaks, I need to make something. And then the downwinding really drove my passion to actually develop a foil system that might actually work. Multiple disciplines. And so yeah, I did, you know, the gorge stuff, I did, you know, a bunch of downwind stuff. There's some of our videos on the website from back in the day.
And you were designing and manufacturing that?
Yeah, we were making it all, you know, the early gear manufacturing. Was it manufacturing? I don't know, it was in the workshop at home. Yeah. So we were making some gear.
What was your methodology? Talk us through it.
Yeah, well, the very first foils, I just got sections and plan forms drawn up on bits of paper, you know, one-to-one, used the paper as templates, and got sections of bits of wood and used all the sections, like building a model airplane, like using bits of wood as the sections and then gluing it all together and wrapping it in a skin of carbon and bolting it onto an old kite foil mast that I'd broken and beefed up and changed, and the fuselage that we CNC'd. And then I did manage to meet Kevin Trotter, who's a pretty influential designer. He's one of the partners in Axis now, and he helped a lot with the initial design phase. I was helping them a little bit with some boards and stuff they were working on, and you know, we had a good old time working on some early system ideas, and yeah, sort of went from there. And originally, we, you know, the idea was to try and manufacture out of New Zealand, but when you grow volume, you know, globally, it's just the shipping kills you out of New Zealand. You got to all the materials are imported. By the time you export, like I can ship, you know, an Allen key, you know, out of New Zealand would cost me more than shipping a foil kit out of Asia around the world. So pretty much that's one of the big drivers for manufacturing in Asia. It's kind of in the center, it's halfway between Europe and the States, whereas New Zealand is so far out on a limb, it's really hard to make the economics work.
It's daft, isn't it? Because this whole Asian production thing has got such a stigma now in the world in general. We don't want to be, for good reason, we don't want to be producing it in shitty factories that aren't paying any good money and all this sort of jazz. But when you actually look at the reason why people produce there, it's for exactly those reasons. You just can't justify it otherwise. You wouldn't have these companies if it wasn't for those countries to do it.
That's right. And the goods would just be too prohibitively expensive. I mean, you can, you know, there are brands that have managed to do that, you know, out of Europe and stuff like that. But they've tagged in with some, you know, big manufacturing that already existed, which is great. I didn't have access to that. So, you know, that was the only choice we really had to scale up. And I got hats off, you know, that Asians are hardworking people. No one there is looking for a handout. Everyone's working hard every day. They get up, they go to work, and they do their best. And, you know, the challenge is people don't understand necessarily the product they're making. But, hey, think about your iPhone and your computer, whatever, they're all made in Asia. So I think they do it. Interesting, there was a test done with Teslas recently where they measured the specs of all the Teslas from all the different factories, and the Chinese factory beat all the other factories around the world in terms of their
technical. That's cool. That's very cool. Prior to Armstrong then, so you were just mentioning that you were sort of tinkering and starting to make your own foils. There must have been some sort of engineering background or some tinkering background. What were you doing for work before all that background. Sort of stuff?
Yeah. Well, I grew up in a sailing family, so that's probably the biggest, you know, influence, really. So I grew up, I actually was born in the UK and jumped on a boat when I was 6 months old, kidnapped by my family and, you know, sailed around the world for a few years. So, and, you know, did a lot of that. And you're always, life on a boat, you're always fixing something, right? That we always were on the boat with Dad when we settled in New Zealand, you know, Mum and Dad, you know, sailing every holiday. That's my dad's passion, right? So he's still got a boat. He's 90. He's got a yacht. He's still, you know, we drag him out in the yacht now, so that's pretty cool. And that's probably in step one. And then I ended up getting a bit of a passion for film and TV and got into the film industry in New Zealand and worked for a really talented Austrian engineer who built underwater housings for movie cameras back in the day. This was started off in the 90s, and that was when, you know, before digital, so big film cameras, and we used to build custom underwater housings and use them to shoot, you know, commercials and movies and stuff like that, scenes for movies with these massive cameras. And so the engineering side really came from Ziggy. Zygmunt Spath was his name. He's passed now, but yeah, he was an inspirational Austrian engineer that had a passion for diving and underwater photography. So yeah, I did that for 18 years, and then kind of got disillusioned with working too many hours and moved to Raglan and went surfing and met Rob Whittle, who was, you know, one of the lead designers for Ozone down in Raglan, and we sort of became mates and went on kitesurfing adventures. And then I got to this foil thing and got to a point where I had something vaguely decent, and we sat down and was like, hey, let's start a foil company. And luckily at the time, there were only about five around, so it made good sense.
He was telling us about a, he's a man that believes in an eye-to-eye contact and a firm handshake when it comes to a business deal and investing in a company. Can you confirm?
Yeah, 100%. Now, Rob's a legend. Rob's all about, you know, feel and sensation. Obviously, world champion, a few, you know, aeronautical disciplines. And, yeah, he definitely is a man of his word. Just a, you know, incredibly talented individual. And his eye for detail and aesthetic, it just comes from just years of experience, you know. And so, yeah, 100%. He's, yep, he is, yeah, a good man to be involved with.
Is he still involved now?
Yeah, for sure.
What's his role? Or is he a silent partner?
He's a partner, and he's kind of, you know, chief inspiration officer. Probably call it, if there is such a thing. Yeah, he doesn't have an official role, but basically he definitely, you know, helps keep me on track because I can get away with my own tangents as well as we all can.
Well, he was very positive in his explanation of who you were as a person, but there was definitely, I think the word crackpot came to mind at the same time.
Well, we probably both are a little bit in our own different way. He's much more methodical. People probably don't understand so much about Rob, but he's such a hard worker. Like, he, when he has a project or being as bonded about something, he will sit down at his desk and work on that thing almost 24 hours a day until he's figured it out 100%. So he's a bit of an animal like that. People don't realize how many hours he puts in. He gets up dawn every day, does a workout, gets on his computer, smashes a bunch of workout for a few hours, you know, before he'll do anything else. He pretty much every day, 7 days a week. So no, he's epic. And what, I mean, he has written, he's also very talented. His dad's a really talented artist, and he's written most of our, you know, front of house marketing stuff, you know, is words that have come from Rob. Really.
So who did it? Who started? It was obviously yourself and your idea, and then Rob was there. Who also was part of Armstrong at the start? Who's part of it now? Who is Armstrong now, obviously?
And what was the first product? Yeah.
The very first product were two foils. Well, I get real products. I mean, we made a bunch of prototypes in New Zealand and we tried to get some manufacturing off the ground there, but we just couldn't really make it work. And I was really lucky. I ended up working for, you know, a surfboard factory in Asia for a while I was kind of floating around getting this project off the ground to sort of make some money, helping them with some composite layout stuff for the race boards. So I'd been making, you know, race ups myself for a little while. And, you know, from my boat building background with my family. And so, yeah, we had that connect. And so we went, okay, let's just make these foils. And we made a CF 1600 and 800 that were based off these hand-shaped wooden foils that I'd been making in the workshop. So we scanned the ones that we liked, and then we put them in the computer, and we sat down and figured out, you know, how to improve it. And we used some foil sections of Rob's. They're actually aerofoil sections that Rob had used in hand gliders in the past. And we just put those straight in, and hey, it worked better than a lot of the stuff we tried. So we're like, cool, let's try and make a system that doesn't break, which was the core of our project at that point. That was a long process, and we ended up using the titanium core, which we've kept, you know, the whole way through, because it's just really great material for the screw, you know, the screw holes primarily. And yeah, just ties the thing together nice and solidly, and you know, hey, everything can break if you hit it into a reef hard enough. But that's been our big goal, is to make something that was durable and that you could actually thrash around in the real world. Because as we know, we all hit our foils on the bottom, you know. So over here, it's the daily occurrence pretty much. But
so that was your main driver, because that was one of the questions that I had on the list was, you know, the Armstrong system from the beginning has been radically different to what's out there. I suppose your closest competitors, Levitas potentially, with that slot in fuse, but, you know, yours is still pretty different. So was that the thing that you identified in the market that wasn't there, durability?
Yeah, it's that was the big driver for me, because I was just breaking everything I was using. I am a gear thrasher. I'm 90 kgs most of the time. I'm 88 at the moment because I've been training, but yeah. No, I just thrashed gear, and so I was breaking all my kite foil gear.
Through jumping or through hitting the bottom?
Yeah, jumping it, and mostly jumping the kite gear. you'd break it, right? And so, and we were on pretty fine, you know, those early kite foils were pretty lightweight, you know, carbon foils, and they weren't really intended for jumping, I don't think, probably. And so, yeah, we were snapping them, and they were expensive bits of kit. So I was like, right, let's have a think about it. And I did, you know, I had some contacts in the boat building world, and I just knew that titanium and carbon are just a match made in heaven, right? So we're like, right, let's just use that. And then it took us a while to figure out, you know, how to do that. Our initial fuses were machined, and, you know, and the bottom bracket part, you know, of the mast, that was kind of the core concept. The reason why we went with that is that, like, stays in the high-end boat industry that are composite, they wrap the fiber down, like, around the thimble, you know, and then back up again, right? So you've got a continuous fiber running down one side, wrapping around and going back up the other, which is the strongest way to use the fiber. And so I was like, okay, well, let's do that with our foil. Surely we can figure that out. It's proven to be, manufacturing-wise, really difficult. But, and that is the driver of why we've got, you know, the hex in there, is because that's the best shape that we can fit inside the round for the fibers to wrap. But the fibers do wrap all the way down the mast around and back up the other way, which does improve, you know, the durability of that whole area for sure.
Did you, when you were starting out on this journey, you know, I can appreciate the manufacturing complexity of that, and even now that you as a brand has scaled up, it's still expensive, it's still on the top end. Were you considering final price point at the very beginning, or was it like, shit, let's just make a small number and see how it goes and hope that quality will deserve the right money?
That's exactly it. Like, there was no thought about, and that's probably been business-wise, you know, the most challenging thing for us to gain market share or distribution is that, yeah, I there was nothing, no thought whatsoever about price point at all. We were just like, let's just make this thing as good as we can. And even to this day, our fuses are significantly more expensive to manufacture, and our masks actually, than probably most other systems out there. But, you know, it's a bit of a legacy thing now. We've got, you know, a lot of loyal customers with that gear, so it's a system that we have improved a lot over the years in terms of our layups, in terms of our, you know, tolerances and all of that sort of thing. But the core of the system is pretty much the same, which means everything's cross-compatible.
But someone's always going to be the most expensive, aren't they? There's always got to be somebody.
Well, we're actually not anymore anyway, so.
What I like is how, as Freddie and I get to have these conversations with, you know, different I guess influencers and designers in this industry, is it's amazing. Well, I guess it's not amazing. There's so much variety in life, but it really interests me that there's so much variety in terms of approach. You've got some designers from some brands, some will go on record, some tell it to us off record afterwards. You've got some that are very, I do what I'm told from above, you know, the commercial aspect of this is told to me, so I'm working to a price point. You've got other designers that love the commercial aspect of design, and they don't actually see design as enough of a challenge if, like you're saying, you know, we're just going to build the best bloody thing we can irrespective of price and then figure out the price afterwards, whereas some of the designers are like, no, I love the challenge of being somewhat limited and coming up with the best possible thing that I can for that price point, and they actually put that upon themselves. That's not pressure from their manager's brand or whatever. I just find that fascinating.
No, it's great. There's always limitation though with design, no matter which way you cut it. Like, you're limited by, you know, the materials you understand at the time. You're limited by what the structures that you're trying to achieve, what the dimensions, you know, that you're trying to achieve are, and that limits, you know, screw diameters. Like, there's so many little details that come into it, screw lengths, you know, all that sort of stuff have a big impact on the actual overall shape. Like, you know, the screws are, you know, screws are a massive part of this sport for sure. So that's, we had a lot of fun working on our screw system, and that is still a learning process, and it's all good.
So in the beginning, and I don't mean in any way for this to be an attack. It's great to hear it from the horse's mouth. Like, the new Armstrong Performance Mast is, I haven't used it personally, but everybody that has is like, that's up there as one of the best, one of the stiffest by far. The early ones, which I have used, were flexi-ish for a carbon mast. What I want to know is, was that something that you were aware of at the time of it going out? And is it something that we only became aware of as customers, as the whole industry went towards bigger span wings, bigger area wings altogether? And it sort of highlighted a problem that, like you were saying, if you were predominantly kite foiling at the beginning, or if you're a proficient downwinder, if your skill level's high, you're probably not using that big of a foil. And so actually mast stiffness might not have been obvious as a thing to target in the beginning. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, was it something you were aware of, or was it something that came up after?
Well, it's always definitely something. Yeah, it's definitely something you're trying, but it's like that limitation, because we did our, at that point, we were trying to keep the cords at the bottom of the mast really fine. And, you know, we were trying to reduce the drag that way. And we didn't understand as much about the sections then as we do now, with, you know, a lot of really great input. And in actual fact, you know, possibly having the cord too fine at the bottom was the biggest driver of that. We've always used really high-end fibers, and the layups have been good. But as you say, 100%, as the, you know, the foils that we were making when we first set up that system had half the span of the foils that are being used now, you know. So that was probably the biggest thing, like you say, that, you know, it probably exposed the weakness in the shape of that mast that, you know, we did, you know, update with the new masts. Although, having said that, for the surf, we were really interested in race gear. We're still not into race gear at all, actually. We're just trying to make gear that feels great to ride, and a certain amount of flex in when you're surfing the foil on surf size foils actually makes them feel great. Like, I've on a surfing sense, I still ride the old masts if I'm on a smaller foil in smaller waves. It gives me more pop out of the turns, actually. So it's a, you know.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm still really curious about that. I'm glad you brought that up, only because I think that's a sort of divisive opinion that is very much a preference thing. And I that's what I really like about this industry, is we're all so young. So many of these things are, people are talking about it as though there's a right or wrong. And actually, there's probably a large part of preference in that, isn't there?
I think so. That depends what you're doing, though. Like you say, if you're using a bigger wing, if you're winging and you're really hiking out, you know, you're on a bigger board, you're leaning hard over, you know, definitely stiffness is going to be your friend, you know, to a degree there. But I still think some flex is important, because it dampens out, you know, oscillations in the water. As soon as you got some waves, there's a lot of, you know, a lot of up and down energy in the water. And so some dampening, I think, is useful. And everything flexes to a degree. Like, nothing is 100% rigid. Where you do need rigidity definitely is in the top, you know, the top third of the mast and the connection to the board, which you're driving your feet through. The lower part of the mast, I actually have always quite liked a bit of flex down there. And so I wasn't fazed by the amount of flex. The top part of our mast actually has always been, it was probably the beefiest for a long time, actually.
Yeah, because it's got quite a big section, hasn't it, at the top?
Yeah, it's always really beefy in the top third.
Like the old kite race
even,
foils.
It was probably even beefier than those. It's always been pretty fat at the top. And that was exactly for that connection. And the bending down the bottom was in the water. I kind of liked it. But like you say, it was time for an upgrade, especially with those big foils. So.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? When you look at other brands, I mean, I'm always going to compare Axis and Armstrong together, and you talk to Adrian, we only talked to Adrian a few weeks ago, and all he ever talks about is it needs to be as stiff as possible, stiff as possible, stiff as possible. And so to have this contrast with people wanting a little bit of flex, but then also being drilled, it needs to be as stiff as possible.
Well, think another example, Freddie. Think about what Charles was saying, his brief from when he was designing the new F1 carbon range that's just come out. They've just released their new series of masts, and he was saying that Raf, he had produced, or not him personally, but the team had produced masts with varying sections, varying tapers up it. And Raf, who ultimately at the end of the day has the final say, just said, no, I don't like the feel of that. I want it to be a consistent section. So that's what I'm saying. I love that there's so much
difference of opinion. But was that for flex, though? I was curious about
that. No, feeling. He was talking about the feeling of it. He doesn't like the feeling of an adjusted section.
But was that, I thought we weren't talking about flex when we were talking about that, because we were talking about the fact that it doesn't, it's 14 mil the whole way down, isn't it, as opposed to...
No, yeah, it's a feeling down. Thing. Yeah. They wanted to, as Army's saying, they wanted to adjust it to make it stiffer, but as a feeling perspective, it was like, nope, I don't like it. It's just interesting.
Yeah, it comes down to, I mean, stiffness squares with thickness, right? So thickness is a massive driver in that. And hats off to, you know, Adrian and Kevin with their system. You've got to give it to them. For early days, obviously, they were all alloy. And, you know, to have an alloy rig that rigid is definitely an impressive achievement. And, you know, there's some great design in their system. And they did go for, you know, a thick section in the mast, but they made a really pretty section that worked well for its thickness. But thickness is always going to have more push through the water as well. So, you know, there's always a trade-off in the feel somewhere. So when you've got a, you know, if you go to the thickness that they were up to, and they got up to 19 mil with their thick alloy mast that a lot of people were loving the stiffness, and hey, that was definitely rigid, but it means you got a bigger cord because you know, there's only a certain cord percentage thickness that you can really, you know, handle. And so that just meant that whole rig did go a lot straighter through the water. Now, for a lot of people, actually, that was the right thing, you know. For myself, I'm really trying to get something that turns nicely. So we're coming from a slightly different place, but there's pros and cons to everything. There's nothing, personally to me, there's no right answer to anything, which is the exciting thing. There's
correct.
Everything yep. has a pro and a con, and everything has a plus and a minus, really.
And it leaves room for many players in this market.
Yeah, and everyone's got their own sensation. It's a sensation-driven sport. I mean, hey, if you're right at the point end of racing, then, yep, it's a slightly different game. And have a look at what's happened with the Olympics. Like, there's probably, you know, one kite that's going to get used in this in the Olympic regatta, and maybe two foil systems, you know? So it does get honed down.
Cool, but hasn't that kite brand pissed everybody else off by doing what they're doing? Who knows? Different
Who
conversation.
Knows? Who knows? I don't know what's going on. I don't want to comment. but yeah, but
it does show with again. I'm comparing it or talking about Axis and Armstrong, but when you look at what the owners like yourself, what you do and what you want out of a foil system, and what Adrian wants out of a foil system, and what Raf wants out of a foil system, there are reasons why those brands are the way they are, because you personally like what you like and you produce what you like, and hopefully people follow down that. And same way you'll get the likes of AFS, for instance, are all seeming to be about, not all about, but have pinpointed the speed and the race side of things. And so their systems are going to be super fast kit. So it is.
Which disciplines do you think Armstrong's the strongest in?
Well, for us, it's about the sensation. So our foils do generally have a feeling of freedom, because you can really push them through turns. You know, like, that's been the biggest driver probably for most of our designs. But we are listening, and that's been more what I've been wanting to try and, you know, get something that just feels really free, that at any point I can go in any direction I want and the foil's not going to tell me which way I've got to go. But there, you know, flip side to that, and that is on our 60 and 50 fuse. On the 70 fuse, you know, it is more stable, and that's something we probably haven't told that story enough. Fuse length's a massive driver in that too, and our you know, 60 fuses are, you know, like, I guess, comparative to crazy shorts or whatever if you're looking at Axis, you know. So that's our standard, you know, and it's been our standard for a long time, whereas the 70 is what most people probably need when they're getting onto our system, because it's going to feel too loose otherwise. But, yeah, where do we sit? I don't know. We try and make gear that feels great, but we are listening a lot more now to, you know, where the market's at. Actually, I didn't want to update the mask. I was like, we love the flex. It's great. But then, in hindsight, it was the best thing we did, you know. It was time to do it, and that was – you know, that was listening to what the market was saying, effectively, and people, and then understanding where the foils had gone. I'm like, actually, yeah, it was time to do that.
I just find it so fascinating to hear key words come out of your mouth in terms of how it relates to the feelings that I have had riding your gear. So the one that I spent the most time on would have been the HA925. And I was probably at the point where, because me and Freddie have had the conversation a lot about actually where a lot of the customers in the market stepped onto high aspect foils before they were ready across the whole market. And I think I was just at the point where I was just about at the ability level to exploit that foil. And the term that I actually used to come, because at the same time it was that, and then I think the Eagle came out at the same time, and ART and everything. And I used all three of them. And the performance advantage of that HA95 was so obvious. Like I was so blown away. That was one of the first HA wings I tried, and the ability for it to pick up energy in such tiny swells, being such a small foil relative to what I normally use, I was like, this is insane. But the one word I actually used, I was using it on that shorter fuse, and I think with one of the smaller rear wings as well. At the time, I actually said unrefined, because to me it felt exactly as you've just described it, actually, which is really funny to hear you say that that's exactly how I wanted it, because it did. It felt like it could go in any direction at any one time, which for me, I didn't have the skill level yet for me to want that. So I just find it incredible.
But if you chucked it on a, like the 70 fuse with a bigger tail, it would have gone straighter, right?
So. Yeah, exactly. But I just love the fact that, you know, it's probably over a year on now from the time that I first jumped on that. Now I get to hear it from the horse's mouth. And it's just amazing that exactly what you wanted it to do was exactly how I felt it.
Yeah, and we did say advanced in every bit of literature we put out with those foils, right?
Yeah, but everybody wants the most advanced.
I know, Rob, don't say that. Rob spends hours writing that stuff.
those large span wings were funny, weren't they? Because they are brilliant, but my God, so many people bought them that shouldn't have been buying them.
Well, that's the thing. You put the information out there. You try and say a lot of people, you know, in our range, the 1550. Well, to be honest, the 1550 has been our nature's 1550 has been our best seller, and so, you know. I was like, oh, proportionally, maybe that's about right. It's about the right number of people getting them. But in hindsight, probably, you know, too many people bought the HAs before they were, you know, probably ready for it. But they were ready for something. And in some ways for us, that's a comment on us. So we probably put that too far, too early. We should have trimmed it back a little and made it, dulled it down and made it more stable. We could have pushed it further forward on the fuse connection. We could have put a thicker section in it. There's a bunch of stuff we could have done, but it's not where my brain was at the time, so we didn't do it.
No, I think that's only natural. That's only human. You were trying to find the absolute utmost of performance, and that's why that MA series now has become so unbelievably popular, because you've seen that HA and what you can do. You've realised, okay, it's got its limitations in some places, and it's not suitable for some people. Now you'd sort of trim yourself back, and it's a standard bloke thing to do. You go fucking balls to the wall as good as you can possibly do, and then you go, oh, hang on, I maybe don't need all of that, and so you
might have overcooked it a bit on a couple of things,
and so you rein it back in for the general public.
I was getting given shit from Freddie for months and months and months because I was riding the Phantom from F1, it's, you know, relatively comfortable foil to ride. And Freddie was giving me shit going, you need to get something else. You need to get something else. You need to get something else. He was trying to ride this ART for months and months and months. And then it was, I don't know how many months in that he went back and was like, I'm going to take a step back, kids. Went on to some HPS or something and was then like, oh, it's so much better on this. Oh, thank God.
And then that's not how it happened at all.
And nowadays he's got a little bit better, and nowadays he's quite happy stepping back and forward. That's exactly what happened.
Not quite. Not quite, but kind of.
He's shaking his head.
I was definitely pushing. I was definitely pushing. But whatever.
Were you guys surf foiling these or winging or a bit of both?
Both. Well, some of us, we've had about two sessions surf foiling where we've both looked at each other and gone, do you know what, Freddie? The number of times you've gone surf foiling today, we are actually surf foiling, as in it's what we're doing the majority of the session rather than the minority of the session. We've had a few special days.
Yeah. Surf foiling is always a lot of paddling. Surfing always is. That is surfing, right? Exactly. If you don't like paddling around in the ocean, well, yeah, surfing's not for you. Yeah.
We're getting there, though. But that was the realization for me with the arts, for instance, because I tried surf foiling the arts and very quickly realized this is a fucking stupid idea. I can't get this thing going at all. To get it going, I have to go out into waves that I shouldn't be going out in with a foil at all. That's when I sort of stepped it back. But for us, it's mainly wing.
It's a skill level thing too. Like if you get a skilled, you know, surf foiler, someone that's really good, and they jump on that foil, they'll make it rip, right? I mean, and that's the hardest thing. If you can't, but I love getting feedback from customers or people who are normal guys, you know, out there sessioning. That's actually where you get some of your best feedback, because rippers like Oscar, you know, they can make anything work. They're so talented, right? So you've got to listen to your team riders, but you really just need to see what people are actually experiencing. And it's nothing better than turning up at a local beach and just going for a session and looking at what people are riding and having a chat to them on the beach and getting their general feedback of what they're feeling. I mean, that's the best part about the sport and the camaraderie. It's a bit like, it is a little bit like kiting that kind of departed from windsurfing. I don't know quite why. Maybe windsurfing had been around a long time and got a bit clicky and people were a bit intense, but with winging and kiting, it's such a great group of people that just love to help each other out at the beach. No matter where you go in the world, I've been, you know, lucky enough to travel, you know, quite a lot of the world with this, you know, crazy adventure now. And yeah, everywhere you go, people are just, no matter what gear they're on, they're just stoked with being on the water and you know, want to talk with you and yeah, share their stories. It's cool.
A penny just dropped there, Freddie.
Go on.
Well, Army was just saying about how, you know, you get the best riders and they'll make anything look good. And I'm wondering whether he's struggling in the design department and he went, fuck, we better get Wilmot on board. That's what it is. He's gone off.
Nathan's effort, Nathan and Oscar's effort. I think Oscar's a good mate of Jeremy's and Oscar's just been frothing on the gear. And we've got some development stuff happening and I'm not sure totally of the full story there, to be honest. I actually wasn't involved in that one at all. So, yeah, I think Oscar just gave him some...
You're telling me his paycheck wasn't big enough that you had to authorise it? I don't believe it.
Too funny. No, luckily enough, we've got our boss now, Nathan, who's, you know, taking the reins and he's cracking that whip now. So, no, it's great. He's taking a lot of pressure off Rob and I.
Maybe that's when Rob comes in to do the firm handshake and the stare in the eye.
Is Nathan the one that has to rein you two in? Is that how that works?
Yeah, he's got a tough job. Yeah, he's got to try and keep us corralled, pointing in the same direction, which we do kind of go like this a bit sometimes. But it's difficult because we're often in a different place. Like being in a different place, it's great when we're at home, we have a catch up in Raglan at Rob's place or at my place or whatever. But we've spent so much of the year now, you know, not in the same zone. And COVID was actually great for that. We spent much more time together. It was actually kind of cool. But, yeah, now we're all over the world again, and it's tricky to keep coordinated. So Nathan's got a tough job, but he's doing a great job. And we've got our manufacturing team in Asia, and so that's a big team to manage as well now. And it's an interesting job. But Nathan's a very driven individual, and he's the right man to, you know, take us to the next level. And basically he got hold of Oscar and was like, yeah, I'll just give Jeremy some gear, see if he likes it. And the conversation went from there. I can't tell you the full story. I don't actually know.
Well, we chat to Jeremy a fair amount and he seems really happy with what's going on at the moment, which is good. Obviously very sour from my point of view, losing him from the Axis guys, mainly because we'd just blown up a massive photo of him to put in the office down here on Axis gear. And then he swapped.
Oh, stick it there anyway. Stick it there. I don't know what, whatever you want to do.
Well, that's the thing with that guy. He's. I thought it was really quite sweet when he announced the move and all the rest of it. We were messaging him back and forward about it and what he was doing and stuff. And then he was like, "Yeah, but I really want to announce it. I really want to do this, but I've got so much good media on all of the gear and I want that to sort of have its time and do its justice." He's clearly a very well-intentioned, loyal guy.
Yeah, he seems like an absolutely great guy. I haven't met him, but he's actually heading up here to join us for a week or so. So that's going to be epic to, you know, meet him and you know, yeah, see, he's an absolute ripper, obviously. So, yeah, no, it's fantastic. And I think what happened is we've got some really interesting development coming up. And like you say, it kind of kicked in properly with the MAs. And now we're sort of stepping it up with the next ranges of foils that we're working on. And, you know, it's a constant process. Like, there's always, every time, it's the hardest thing actually is to finish something because you're just about there and you're like, oh, but we've discovered this new thing. But if you keep waiting for the next new thing, you can never put anything out. So at some point, you've got to draw a line in the sand and go, right, that's where that's at. That's great. Move on to the next thing. And it's good to have the different ranges. That really helps.
The best engineering expression that I ever got told by a good friend of mine was don't let perfect get in the way of progress.
Exactly. You've got to go, yep, that's the best we can do right now and carry on. But no, we've got some really cool development. We have, you know, through Nathan's sailing context. Nathan's, you know, a top New Zealand sailor and comes from basically one of the top New Zealand sailing families. And he's pretty well connected in that game. So we've got some really interesting development that is going to come out in the next few months. Who knows? It is months, definitely months, because these guys don't do anything by halves and every element, you know, it's getting really thoroughly analyzed and looked at. And, we sent Jeremy one of the first prototypes that we've been working on. He was just frothing on it. So that's a great thing.
You've been very restrained there, Army, not saying the two words America's
Cup. I was just thinking that.
We rip the piss out of you and that marketing constantly because there's not a video that goes out that doesn't bang on about the old America's Cup.
Yeah, it was my original inspiration to do this stuff. Like, seeing the 2013 New Zealand America's Cup boat sailing around Auckland Harbour, that's why I got into kitefoiling. I'm like, I got to figure out how to foil because that's just too good. And then we just got really lucky hanging out with those guys, and they have driven a lot of our the HA foil. The reason why we made that really was like, yep, that's those guys using those aspect ratios. We've got to make an HA foil. I mean, you know,
a lot of our stuff is motivated by those. Does the brand actually have? Does is there any direct contact with any designers actively in that industry? And if so, is it the odd bit of verbal advice down the pub over a pint, or is it like actually we've got some design hours from them?
There's definitely been a lot of verbal stuff down at the pub. We actually session with you know, Pete and Blair and Jimmy as well. So riding with those athletes, you know, and those sailors are athletes for sure. You do learn a lot because they are deeply involved in the design process as well. And so if we have a conversation at the beach when we're sessioning, to me, that's actually the best feedback you can get from someone that actually really knows what they're talking about. And just some little comments. How about try this? How about try that? It's some of those comments have massively, like, for example, the MA, some of the comments Pete made about some stuff and our wings, actually, because Pete's obviously very talented, you know, with the rigging and the sail stuff too. Trimming sails is what Pete and Blair do. Just some little comments. It's like this opens your mind. You're like, oh, okay, yep, that's something we've got to explore. And it's really influenced our MAs, the wings. And, you know, Nathan's brother Blair, like, he drives the boat, so, you know, on the foils. So he's Nathan's fairly well connected there. And, yep, we have some, you know, consulting that we're paying for now as well, for sure.
That's very cool. So this, have you got your checkbook ready to to write us a check? Because one of the things that I've got on my list here, we put a bit of a shout out to some of our close friends about whether they've got any questions or good ideas for questions when we have guests. And in fact, I'll read it exactly as it was sent.
Okay, here we go.
How did he make the new A-wing so incredibly bloody good? So that was the question, which I'd like you to answer.
Well, it definitely wasn't just me. That's a massive joint project, that particular one. And that was the most exciting thing about it. That was the biggest collaborative project that we've done so far. And we got to a certain point with, you know, the original A-wing that we were like, yep, that's, you know, we made a start, you know, which was great. But what we learned, we're like, yep, we've learned a lot, but to take this to the next level, we need to bring in some fresh talent and some fresh ideas. And so we went out and found, some guys who are sail designers, kite designers, windsurf sail designers, and wing designers. They've been doing it for, you know, a long time. And we're like, let's actually work on this project together. And then we did get some key bits of advice from Pete and just a lot of hard graft from the production team. You know, it was a lot of 18-hour days getting the thing put together. We were trying to do a couple of slightly new things that, you know, it's in the marketing, but unless you really dig into it, it's hard to, you know, even figure out what we've done on some of that stuff. The big thing is to make a traditional Dacron wing light and to get the shape to translate. The hardest things with wing design I've found is you can draw anything up on the computer that looks beautiful, but translating that into the actual physical product with the materials is so difficult. Like getting the camber of the foil to match what you designed is a very difficult thing with those materials. Yeah.
What software are you using to do that? Are you using the in-house ozone one or
shit? No. No, your Surfplane is the standard, got industry standard software. Now, the Ozone stuff's all proprietary for their factory. We did actually have a brief discussion with Ozone about manufacturing some stuff there a long time ago and manufacturing maybe some foils for them, but that never happened. And the rest of Rob's partners in Ozone, I don't really know their full setup, to be honest, and they wanted to keep it very separate, which is totally fine, and we're just totally off on our own separate tangents. But yeah, Surfplane's kind of industry standard software that they use for that. For wing design, but getting the way them, it's every different, even every different Dacron that's the same weight from a different manufacturer, it stretches differently, right? So when you pump up, you know, the wing to the pressure it requires to be a rigid structure, everything's bending, and to get the canopy, you know, profile to sit nicely in the shape that you've designed, there's always a lot of nip and tuck to make that happen. And so it's a
Are you telling me, Army, that Duotone have been lying to us all these years with their perfect, it's 15% lighter and it's exactly 2 times stiffer and the elongation is 3 times this? You mean, what? It's not?
Those guys know how to design. Those guys definitely know how to design, you know, sails, kites and wings, right? They've been doing it a long time. And that's the art of designing those products, is getting your design to translate into the finished product. And often you'll tune it so that the shape in the software isn't actually quite what it's gonna always changes, right, when you manufacture it. And so with those materials, the way they stretch, you've got to build that into your design. I guess that's the key part, and that's very difficult part, because the exact amount, people may not realize, like, the amount of shrinkage on the leading when you fold and sew the leading edge or any of the strongly reinforced Dacron seams, the amount of shrinkage on that seam is massive, right? It can be up to 15% on some thick, you know, bits of reinforcement. So to factor all that in on every seam, there are a lot of seams on these things. So it's a technical job. It's very difficult. So now the biggest thing, I mean, long story short, it's been a big team effort, and we really decided we weren't going to rush it. We were going to take our time. So we just said to the design team, and that was really exciting for them, because they've always been under a lot of time pressure to get their design out. We're like, look, we don't really care how long this takes. Let's just make as many versions as we need to get something that we're all really excited about.
And how many was that then?
Too many. Yeah, no, it's been a long process. We've been going, yeah, we were going pretty much bang on 2 years when we released it.
But are we talking, I mean, Rob was talking about numbers of, what was it, 80, 90 plus for the flux?
Yeah.
That sort of number?
It's around that sort of number. It's around that sort of number, yeah.
And so based on the defamation stuff, you know, I've come from the historic kiting side of riding under supported kites in silly winds and pump it up as hard as you bloody can, because the structure that is provided will make more of a difference than any deformation of the actual shape. Are you saying that in winging, a takeaway from this is actually pump it to what is recommended and not more?
Well, you can pump it up a little bit more, but that will flatten off your profile as well, right? So if you the tighter you pump your wing, you're going to make it a bit flatter, which, hey, in high wind for sure is going to help you out a little bit and go upwind a bit better. But in lighter wind, I actually drop 1 PSI out of my wing. So I'll go half to a pound lighter in the pressure on the wing in light wind. Then you actually get more, you get a deeper profile and a bit more pump out of the wing. So it depends. But yeah, if you're a top freestyle kid, you know, those guys do overpump their wings because A, they're getting given them, and B, you know, they're riding wings that are much bigger than most people would hold on to, because they're getting points, they're trying to go higher. Or same with race guys, right? You're riding a much bigger wing than most people would hold. So in that case,
what's your thoughts on wing freestyle, Army? Whilst we're on that subject, because I think it's shit.
Oh, I love watching it. I love watching it. I'm definitely doing it. Has elements of shit involved. <for sure.
laughs> I used to think it was shit, and now that people are actually getting really good, I'm sort of getting.
No, we did.
Over.
We did. We were involved in the GWA event in Tauranga, New Zealand, at the start of the season, and it was actually pretty impressive. The guys, it's always, you know, any of that stuff in real life is always more interesting to watch than on, you know, when you get it recorded and you look at it on your phone. And it's so technical.
It's always been impressive, but it's about whether they should have put that effort into something else is always a question.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. It's, I don't know. It's,
are you going to go out and learn backflips, Army?
I have attempted it, and I got to a point even myself where I just was breaking too much gear, too many wings. I put foils through so many wings. I'm like, okay, I could loop my windsurfer back in the day. So I was like, surely I can do this. But anyways, I just broke too much gear. I'm like, it just gets too painful swimming in, dragging in your broken wing.
Hey, given your involvement in the GWA, and if you haven't listened to our podcast, you'd have missed that conversation. Why is it that the GWA has not running more wave dedicated events and that it's all this surf freestyle? And do you agree with me that that should be the case given how awesome winging is in the waves or no?
Yeah, I think they are going to, and it's happening. Like the next event in Brazil, I'm sure, is more wave focused. I think the big thing that's happened, and as you said, you guys said it earlier in this podcast, like Europe's such a massive driver of winging, and it has been since the windsurf days. Like I think windsurfing in Europe was a lot bigger than anywhere else in the world, and probably still is. In fact, it's probably the only place where windsurfing even still exists, to be honest. But anyway, and it still exists in force, you know, and the Europeans have a lot of lakes that they love getting out on, and good on. I mean, it's impressive. Like I was blown away how many people are on Lake Garda, Lake Silverplana, all those lakes. How many people are out there windsurfing, kiting, winging, any other water sport, you name it, they're out there doing it, which is epic. And those locations, there's no wave, right? There's lake bumps. And so freestyle, I think, is a big part of that scene, you know, which is a massive driver in the market. So it makes total sense. And yeah, I mean, people, you'll either love it or you hate it. I actually enjoy watching it. I think it's great. But I am definitely more into riding waves, for sure, 100% with my winging. That's my focus. And so I think they will do it. It's just a time thing. You can't do everything. No one can do everything all at the same time. It takes a lot of effort to put on one of those events. I'll tell you, it's not easy.
That's true.
What that XPS wing then? How do you design it to do everything?
Well, you can't design it to do everything. So it's got some limitations.
Well, I don't know. I've read a lot of the marketing, and not just yourself, but in a lot of the brands.
A lot of the marketing. It does some good stuff. It can't.
What
do everything.
Can't it do?
It's not. I would not call it a race wing. People, you could use it for racing. I don't think it's as fast enough downwind as some other wings out there to be a true race wing. It does go upwind incredibly well, and it luffs out incredibly well, so that it's epic to ride waves with, right? So that, I would say, you'd be very hard-pressed to find a wing that's better in the world right now to ride a wave with. It sits so beautifully. The way you can grab the front handle with your offhand when you're wave riding, you can just hold it there. Even if you get backwinded, you can spin it on that handle, whatever. So I think for that, yep, it's definitely achieved 100%. Yes, there's some elements. You can't make one thing that does everything. I don't know.
It just surprises me that freestyle and wave seem to go hand in hand with wing.
Sort of.
They don't really. Okay, you look at the likes of the Duotone Neo, and it does cross over a little bit with freestyle and wave, but I wouldn't have thought wave and freestyle design would have been the same style of thing. I don't. Because there's no real specific... I mean, you look at the slingshot. What do they call the shit? What was the shit slingshot freestyle wing that nobody bought dart. And anyone that did bought? The dart.
That was a bit fucking of a flop, wasn't it?
Tanked, wasn't it? So nobody's making a freestyle wing. Are we? What does a freestyle wing look like? You know, if you were to just make a freestyle wing, which nobody does because it's a shit discipline.
Brilliant. Love it.
But when they do, because I'm sure they, when it gets big enough, they must do. What does a freestyle wing look like?
Maybe it doesn't matter because those kids are so good. They'll make a paper bag work, right? So just give them a paper bag and say, off you go.
Well, I know, but that's the problem. I don't know. It's a funny one. There's got to be a freestyle wing, specific freestyle wing, and I don't know what it looks like.
Yeah, I think as the sport progresses, there probably will be. It's difficult because that's the one thing with windsurfing you've got to be really careful with, I think, not to overcomplicate things. And we've tried to keep our ranges pretty simple, you know, because windsurfing, if you look at even the brands now, it's been pared back a lot, but there's so many boards, there's so many booms, there's so many masts, there's so many sails. Like, for people that aren't really deeply into it, it's virtually impossible. I used to windsurf a lot when I was younger. That was my first.
And winging's got there, and foiling's not got there, but it's definitely teetering on that edge, isn't it, where people are being like, I hope it doesn't go away
windsurfing. Yeah, if it gets too specialised. Like, I think that's the beauty of the sport. You can use the same wing to wave and to race and to freestyle. And hey, for race, yep, you're going to need to win the race, right? You're going to probably need a wing that, you know, that can do that. But most of them probably could, because the great thing about it is it still comes down to the rider mostly. Like, all of the wings, everyone's still dealing with round leading edge, right? So that's a massive limitation right there. Until we go double skin and all that sort of thing for race, then... You know, and hey, that's probably coming. But until that happens for race, everything's basically going to work.
That sounds like a bloke that's looked into that.
Nah, we know what race is going to be, Freddie. It's old mate here that's made his carbon mylar thing. That will be race. It'll be solid wings.
Is he going fast on that?
Yeah, I mean, mate, it looks so fast, can only be fast.
But can he get it going? Question A.
When he stood still with it, it looked
fast. Is there footage of him ripping around on? I haven't seen that yet.
In my mind, there's plenty. I think with the discipline thing, I think it's a pretty clear story. And I think you're both on the money at different... It's my speculation. I think you're both on the money at different periods of time. Kiting went all round. It was all about the rider at the beginning. And then it went specialist, and then the gear got better and better and better and better, and then they went, oh shit, we understand this so well now, we can actually start to make some gear that does everything. And you know what, back in the day when they first started selling kites that could do everything, it was utter bollocks marketing bullshit, and in fact there was always one thing it did well and everything else badly, whereas now there are kites that will do every discipline relatively well. And I think that right now we think that the wings do everything really well because actually they haven't specialized yet, and there's not one example that does one thing so phenomenally well better than the others that it's such a specialist, whereas that will happen and then it will go full circle. That would be my prediction.
I wonder what would it be like if Johnny Heineken did wing racing on a slingshot dart. Because, I mean, even Rob...
I think you might be... Right now, you might be surprised with the result, but there's a lot of other factors. Look at the foil he's running, right? Like, there's a lot of other, you know, it's not quite as driven by just the wing, you know, so...
Well, that's again, that's the argument, but where's the level? If we call the XPS the top and the slingshot dart the bottom...
Oh, shit, okay.
At what point down that scale does he suddenly slip?
Does he slip
back from first to second to third? Because Rob said himself, you know, Johnny won everything on the flux, but Johnny would win everything on anything. Where's the level where he would actually start losing?
Well, put him on a slingshot foil as well. I didn't say that. Oh shit, I'm in trouble now.
Well, hang on, sorry. We're 1 hour and 11 minutes in and we got him.
There's the clip. We got him.
That's exactly it. Fantastic. He's finally...
Get that check.
We've brought him down to our level. We've taken the media out of him.
Oh, brilliant. Shit.
I can take it off topic, but keep you entertained with a slingshot dart story if you like, Freddie. So this... Yeah, I think people would enjoy it. I was in Antigua this winter just gone, Army, and there's a spot called Half Moon Bay, and there's a very, very talented local rider called Jack Salmon, and I was out there with him and then a local kid, Danai, and it was actually, was it either Christmas Day or Boxing Day, we got our first solid forecast for this spot, really solid wind, good swell, and it's like this crescent-shaped bay. The wind swell, it's... just hits this crescent, jacks up, and you get the most amazing rolling swell that's going into a widening bay.
That sounds good.
It's insane. It's such a good spot, but it's like it's super safe because the breaking section is so small, because then it goes into a widening bay again and it all just sort of crumbles out again. Anyway, Jack's a student at university, so you know his funds are limited, and he had this 4 meter slingshot dart that's been getting him through a couple of sessions. Now we had this run of like 4 or 5 days where it was just on every day, and we were getting up ridiculously early so that we could go before going into work, blah 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 blah. And he discovered, so it was bad enough that he was having to use this slingshot dart for wave riding in prime conditions, but it then started to have a slow leak.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's an even more depressing sign when you'd see him, and it was a reasonable mission to get back into the beach and pump it up. So there he is, dropping into these head-high waves. You'd see him pull off, like pump the wing to get a bit of power, and there's just this dart flapping and folding in half like this. Oh. I've never seen such a situation.
Hey,
where
but
somebody's
it got
been...
it, look, it got him out there and he still got the session, right? So
exactly. We need to be careful, Liam, because haven't we got Slingshot trying to get onto the podcast at the moment?
Yeah. Hey, they've made some good stuff since
Slingshot are a great brand. They are a great brand. Apologies earlier. No, they've made a ton of great gear over the years, and that's the beauty of the sport. It is early days and there's so much progression from everyone to come. It's just exciting. It's such an exciting time, and there's going to be plenty more cool things coming from everyone. It's just great, right? And it's...
I'd just like to add that caveat. Freddie, have you ever actually ridden the dart?
No, of course not.
No, I haven't either. So, just to put all this into context.
Classic. Well, I'll tell you what, the Spencer lads, when they were first doing their backflips on them, made them look pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah,
exactly.
Let's move away from Slate and brands, because it's not going to help anybody at all. What does foiling look like for you personally, Army? What do you do on the water?
Yeah, well, it does nowadays. It does get driven a bit by what we're working on at the time, but it is funny. Like I was doing, you know, a lot of tow foiling and winging when we were developing the MAs, because the smaller ones were too small for me to paddle in to a wave on anything. So we're doing a ton of tow foiling for all of that. And now I'm actually back to a lot more SUP foiling, because we're developing, you know, some more, you know, higher aspect foils and some other stuff, and still a bunch of winging. So generally, in the last 3 to 4 years, there's been a lot of winging, because winging's been such a great thing to do, and just learning to wing, really. That's been a big part of it. And then, getting back into the SUP foiling actually has been great, because I did a lot of that in the early days and hadn't really done any for 2 or 3 years. So this mission, I was like about 6 months ago, like, oh yeah, we're going to do the N2O. Should I better get back on the SUP foil mission? So.
And are you talking mostly downwinding or in the waves as well?
Yeah. Downwinding and in waves. And that's been really fun. So we've got, you know, some pump foils coming out pretty soon, and that's been great to get on the SUP and get out in tiny waves and get a workout. So I've been trying to train. I was actually up at the factories for a couple of months this year. And I would go out to the beach and it'd be half a foot, you know, and I'd be pumping around for an hour having a great time on the pump foil and getting a bloody good workout. So I was stoked. So what foiling is for me, I don't know. I usually have far too much gear, so I travel with, you know, a couple of board bags and a golf bag full of foils wherever I go usually. And just, yeah, try to have the right size for the day, whatever sport you're doing. I still kite foil as well. Kite foiling's great. So add that. But, you know, a kite, I just travel with one kite. I just travel with a 9-meter Hyperlink because they're a great all-rounder and can kind of do everything on that. And if it's too windy for that, I'm winging or downwinding. Or if there's no wind, we'll go for a wave in the morning. So
you had to pick the one discipline to do forever, what would it be?
I kind of think winging is there for me at the moment, just because I do come from a sailing background. I just love the freedom to go upwind and downwind. Downwinding's amazing, but the logistics are a hassle and take a lot of time. But it's kind of addictive. It's worth it, but it's kind of annoying. But winging's great. You just pull up somewhere, go for your session, come back where you ended up and carry on. So, yeah, bang for buck. And winging in waves is just so epic, right? Like, there's a spot down in New Zealand where we're at Bailey's Road, Taranaki, where we go off and it's cross offshore, 20, 30 knots and, you know, head high waves rolling in, and you can get 100 waves in a session. It's crazy.
I think, did Rob tell us about this spot? Is this a
probably
super sketchy spot?
It's not very sketchy, that one. But
yeah, he said that you'd say it wasn't.
There's a couple of rocks.
I'm pretty sure that's exactly
don't hit
how
the
it
rock.
Was.
That's fucking no worries.
Famous last words. So, of course, the first thing you do is hit the fucking rock.
Yeah. Don't worry, the rocks have been hit.
What, I'll bet they have. When you're at home then, I mean, are you sessioning with Rob? Because he subfoils a lot by the sounds of things.
Yeah, he's been doing a lot of that in the last couple of years, just keeping himself fit. Because he went on the motorbike mission for a few years there in the Isle of Man. He did that. He was hardcore into that. So he didn't really get out in the water much for that period of time, and then he got right back into it after he, you know, he came off his bike on the Isle of Man course and somehow survived because he's a bloody lucky bugger.
He didn't tell us about that, did he?
No, didn't he?
No,
he probably doesn't talk about that one much.
He doesn't like to relive it.
What speed did he come off at?
Oh, something, mate. He was racing. One? He was in the middle of the race, mate. Something stupid, right?
Oh,
but he survived anyway. Broke multiple bones.
Do you see the average speed record got beaten again
this
year?
It was like 131 for a long time.
Oh, no, that's...
It's something like 137 miles an hour or something is the average speed.
Yeah, no, that's ridiculous. No.
Average speed.
That race is completely insane, as we know. It's only in the UK thing now.
What's the crack with Raglan then? Why is Raglan such a good spot? Why is it such a big
just
one?
You've got great surf, you've got a great harbour. There's a spot for kiting. The harbour mouth, it's got, you know, a lot of current that funnels out every tide. That's, you know, the prevailing wind is against the tide on the outgoing, and so you've just got most days where you can get going. And it's a really funky seaside village. So yeah, Raglan's an awesome spot.
Why is there so many brands there? Why is there so many? There are brands there, aren't there?
Well, there's only.
It's because Rob's giving out the seed money.
Brilliant. I think. Well, I mean, Chu, who's working for North, he was originally working with the Ozone guys for quite a long time, and he's in Raglan, right? So, but he was already there. He, you know, in rags when he got taken on by Ozone, and he's moved on to North. So North are primarily in Auckland, though. So why there's so many of us in New Zealand? I mean, I think New Zealand has a real, this just boat building background, right? It's just kind of normal.
Yeah, it's a funny one, isn't it? Because I mean, in the kite scene, it never felt like there was as much of a New Zealand impression on the kite scene, whereas the foil scene just seems to be Kiwi focused.
Yeah, massively. there's definitely a few of us into it. I think maybe we've all, during the kite stuff, maybe a lot of the people were working for other people, and you know, North was offshore as well. It wasn't even, you know, didn't have anything to do with New Zealand much, but, you know, that got dragged back with people that have been working for other players, and then they happened to be New Zealanders, and they all kind of dragged it back. We kind of sprang out of our own thing, you know. Adrian and Kevin have been making stuff. Kevin, you know, who does a lot of the grunt and the design work for Axis, has been making the top windsurfers since he was a kid almost, right? Like, he's been doing that stuff for forever. So, yeah.
You said COVID was a nice time to be there, and you're back to traveling a lot again. Do you miss it whilst you're traveling all over the place?
Yeah, not the winter. New Zealand's amazing for 6 months of the year, and then the winter's great if you go to the mountains and get in the snow, but if you're trying to get in the water in the winter, it's just too cold for too long for me. Well, it's okay. You can get good rubber, and maybe I've just got a bit soft in my old age, but yeah, it's just winter's long. It's probably similar. It's probably why so many Poms went to New Zealand. It's similar to your winter. Too long, too wet, and too cold.
The problem is we get good waves is a problem, but you get a little bit tired of six mil of rubber all over.
Yeah, the waves are good in winter in New Zealand too often, but it's just, it's nice to travel.
You don't even think about it in the winter, but I accidentally picked up my winter suit the other day, and so went out for a session in it. And one, I was flipping roasting, but secondly, I'm like, geez, I cannot move.
Yeah, it's
but you've got no other option at the same time.
Yeah, that's right.
We'll get shot if we don't. Where are you going to be in August? The entirety of August. Are you likely to be at home, or are you traveling?
The entirety of August. Oh, the entirety of August. We're here until the M2O, which is the end of July. So we're just prepping for that, doing a bunch of product development. I'll probably stay here for a couple of weeks after that, because no point rushing back to New Zealand midwinter when we've got a whole bunch of product that's just turning up here to test. And then we're going to be in Hood River in the first week of September for the trade show. So we're busy getting a bunch of stuff ready for that. And so August here testing, and I'll probably go back to China and Asia for a bit of a factory mission and hopefully finish some gear off and drag it over to Hood River.
Sure. Sounds like Rich isn't going to be seeing him then, Liam.
No, indeed.
As a good friend of ours who we get on the podcast all the time, who's the technical editor for the Foiling Magazine.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
And who you might have spoken to previously, but his brother's just moved to Raglan.
Oh, right. Oh, there you go.
He's heading out for 5 weeks to say hello.
Oh, brilliant. He'll be getting some sessions, but Rob won't be there and I won't be there either.
I'm sure he'll have fun nonetheless.
Yeah, he'll have a good time.
I was going to ask earlier, actually, but discipline-wise, what are you pushing? You keep talking about, you keep hinting, fucking annoying little hints at new products that you're going to be coming out.
Well,
you're not going to tell us about the products, obviously, but what sort of disciplines are you pushing towards?
It's really hard, actually. It's the hardest part of it, because we are constantly working on new stuff, right? It's actually the job, right? So
yep.
People are like, what are you working on? I was like, yeah, are you working on something new? It's like, well, yeah. What do you mean? That's what we do every day.
We're having a 6 month holiday.
Well, maybe we should. Maybe we should just go on holiday. Ah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, what discipline? The discipline thing is a great question, because it's the whole thing is evolving much more. That each discipline does have its specific needs that can't be met by just one thing. But it's also really difficult, because it is really nice to have a simple bit of kit that you can cross over. And so there are some bits of kit that you can cross over. But for us, it's definitely time to revamp, what we previously called the high aspect range, what it's going to be called, what it's actually going to be, what the aspect ratio is. We're not in a box for that at the moment. We are tinkering with some race stuff only because that's interesting, but that... that just costs money, won't make money. But that process, hey, that could take a year from now before that thing's ready, probably longer, And that is getting some really interesting consulting work done. But what the beauty with developing the race stuff is that'll trickle down to the other gear. So
yeah, I was just about to say that's the whole point of F1 in the first place, isn't it? The amount of stuff that trickles down to the regular car market.
Exactly. From F1. The work we're doing, the consulting work with the race gear and with, the more high performance, high aspects and anything else we might be working on for downwind racing might never see a market. Like, might never see an actual product. But what we learn with the foil section or a twist in the tip or just any little detail that we could learn will definitely make its way into a product. Like the twist, the pre-twist on the XPS wing came directly from Pete Burling saying, oh, yeah, when all our sails, we always, you know, they're always set up, you know, twisted in. And when they load up, they twist off, but that it's twisted off under load. And so that part of the span is carrying its weight. You know, you want the whole span evenly loaded. And when he said that simple thing, you want the whole span evenly loaded, it was just like, holy shit. I was, you know, a couple of years ago, Pete Burling mentioned that to me, and I was like, on the buzzer to Rob and on the buzzer to Nathan and talking about it, and all of a sudden we're like, oh yeah, that makes a lot of sense. We better put that into everything. So yeah, the MA's got that as well, right? So the MA's are twisted, you know, the opposite way to what most people think foils might twist. But when they're loaded, that they're going to wash out because of the sweep. But that bit of tips is carrying load when it's washed out. So it's designing for preload, and it's the same with the wings. It's a whole nother level of thinking, and it's so fun. It's so interesting. What are we making foils for? Definitely, we're targeting the surf market as a big focus right now for us. Surf foiling is just so such great fun, and I think that there's a really massive potential. There's, you know, a lot of the good surfers in the world are starting to get into surf foiling more now. It's been a slow burn. Like, there's always, you know, your absolute rippers, Adam Bennett, Jeremy, and a few other people, you know, who just really push it and get a lot of respect from the surf crew. But we're starting to see some of the really good, more hardcore surfers, you know, giving it a go and opening their mind to the possibility of the foil.
Well, we were under the impression that quite a few of those guys were already actually foiling, but maybe not doing a massive amount, because obviously you put a video, I forget where you actually were, but you were out with John and Nathan and some of the guys there with Oscar as well.
Yeah, that's right. No, we had a little catch up in Fiji. That was just lucky they happened to be there on their boat when we were there doing some work. But like, that's interesting. Like, that's really interesting, though. So what are we doing with the foils? Well, that's where the downwinding comes in, because, see, someone like John, he has zero interest whatsoever in getting his foil into the pocket of a wave, right? Just he's not interested in that side of it. What he wants to do is have a foil that's super efficient and can glide, and he's doing prone downwinders. Like, that's his primary buzz for foiling. And those guys are doing this crazy 18-mile prone downwind run. They chip in at Turtle Bay and they go down the coast of the North Shore and end up like 3 or 4 miles offshore, right in the sashimi zone where there's, you know, a whole bunch of shark diving and stuff, and end up like miles down the coast, right? And you're on prone boards. If you come off foil, you're paddling 3 miles, 4 miles back into the island, right? Cross offshore wind. So pretty hardcore. Basically, don't come off foil. And they just want to go fast, straight, and glide, like, and have that efficiency and pump. Like, it's a totally different thing. They want to use a really small reactive foil. They want to be able to whip it around, get onto it, the tiniest bump, but they want it to go really fast as well and feel really clean and smooth in the water. So a surf foil, like, is it for turning in the pocket of a wave? Well, maybe not, you know. I mean, our MAs do that fantastically already, but and that's for toe, like, that's toe foiling, right? Toe foiling into surf that people aren't surfing, I think the MAs do a great job at. But if you're wanting to get a really beautiful gliding sensation and with minimal energy input for a long period of time, that is going to be a different foil, and that's definitely something we're working on at the moment for sure.
You're also talking about a very specific person,
individual. There, yeah, that's him. But I think the surf market, the interest for them is getting multiple. It's more of a longboard vibe. They're getting multiple bumps on a smaller day when they're not surfing. If the wave's got a decent pocket, most of the surfer will be surfing the surfboards, right? Which is fantastic. Good on them.
What about wake foiling? Because I feel like, I know, you know,
He keeps bringing this up, Army. Yep. Every episode we talk about, he keeps talking about wake foiling.
Great way to progress.
I just think it's progressing really quick, and within the foiling community, going less noticed than perhaps it should.
Yeah, no, the wake market's got massive potential. You know,
and I think that it's a worry that the brands like yourselves that have put so much work into developing and marketing all of the foiling disciplines. It would be a shame to not capitalize on that and then lose out to the big wake brands coming along going, oh, this is growing now, right, we'll release our foil. And like Freddie's mentioned in the past, the likelihood is each boat's just going to have one foil at the beginning anyway, and they'll all just go out and buy whatever it is that gets distributed by O'Brien or whatever.
Yeah, and that distribution setup, and the big wake market's really in the US, that pretty much drives it. And that distribution setup is very difficult to compete with in that market. We have invested a lot. We've got a full-time, you know, guy on the road, Mike Murphy, who actually invented the modern T-foil and, you know, the air chair and all of that. He's been full-time for a couple of years, you know, 3 years for us now on the road in the wake market in the States. But it's a very difficult market to crack into because of the way those shops run their distribution. And they've got pro shops, and they like to buy one set of gear, which includes all the tow toys, all the water skis, all the wakeboards, everything from X, right? So if you don't carry that whole range, it's a very difficult market to crack, which is possibly why people aren't really interested. I mean, we've got Noah Flegel, who's absolutely shredding on the wake, obviously, and the CF foils, you know, for wake riding are amazing because you don't need to be pumping around much. If you come off the wake, you know, the boat will stop and you grab the rope again. So you don't need maximum pump efficiency, but those foils really like to turn and are really forgiving. So Noah, it's interesting, like Noah said something that kind of did really make me think differently, you know, last time I was in New Zealand a few months ago, was he just loves the 950, the 205 tail, because he's just wanting a rig that he knows exactly what it's going to do when he lands his aerials. And he doesn't want anything, like he finds the MAs have too much kick. So for the winging, that's great. The guys want to go super high. They're getting heaps of kick when they're boosting. But he doesn't want so much kick because he gets plenty off the wake to do his rotations. He needs it when he lands, he needs it just to sit and be really easy, because he can land a bit off axis or sideways, and he doesn't want it kicking out on him and injuring him, right? So he's actually really interesting. And we're gonna develop some foil stuff more specifically with Noah, you know, as we go, which is pretty exciting in that wake space. But yeah, the wake market, it's a complicated beast.
I feel like with the wake stuff, the wake stuff is complicated. And like I said, so Liam and I chatted about this a little while ago. On one of our own, we do podcasts just by ourselves, chatting absolute horse shit for as long as we can possibly do. And I listened to it yesterday, Liam, because I'm a sad twat, and I listened to ourselves talking through the same stuff again. But the argument, my conversation was the same, because I was very much under the impression that I think wake foiling is bigger than we consider. We're not in a position. Liam's got an old boat with his dad that he runs on the sea down here. It's not a massive ski area in general. Up north in the lakes, there's far more. Obviously, America dominates massively. My argument being, I wouldn't think Armstrong is a brand that, as much as you might want to sell that many foils, with what you produce at the price point that you produce it at, you're probably never going to sell mass market wake foil kit because of the stuff that you want to produce. The likes of Hyperlite and O'Brien and Joby, for instance, they're the guys that are going to make real shit cheap basic foil setups that every boat can add on with their Ringo, their monoski, their water skis and their kneeboard. Whereas if somebody then goes, right, I actually like this wake foiling stuff. I wonder what else I can do. I wonder who's good with wake foiling. Boom. You look at Noah's Facebook or Instagram. You're like, oh, okay, well, he rides Armstrong. That's where your market is, presumably.
Yeah, it's not going to be the entry level wave for sure. And I guess everyone probably thought wake foiling was going to happen a bit faster, but it took a long time. I mean, wake surfing's been around a long time, and it took a long time for that to take over, and it primarily has now. There's still a hardcore wakeboarding.
Why is that? Why is wake surfing?
Have you not seen the overweight Americans that wakes up?
Well, yes.
Because is it because
hold the rope for more than 60 seconds a lot of the time?
Is it because any fucking idiot can do it?
I think you're closer to the boat, right? You're right back at the boat. The boat vibe's fun. Like I got introduced to it 3 years ago with Mike when we took it on, did a little sales trip around the States just before the COVID madness. And yeah, it's just a cool vibe. Everyone, it's kind of a little party vibe. You're on a little boat, yet the music's up loud, you're doing your thing. It's great fun. So, and there's so many lakes, like the US. I mean, I think that's the reason why US is such a driver, and I'm not sure about Europe. I haven't really looked at it for wake yet, but there's so many lakes in the US, and all of them have a wake boat shop, and there's, you know, the craziest little town in the middle of nowhere, and there's guys on their wake boats cruising around, you know, surfing the wake, and they're surfing, like they're, you know, in their heads, they're going surfing.
I can probably save you some time. We can't afford to wakeboard over here.
Is that something to do with Brexit?
We can't afford the boats. We can't afford the fuel. And I guarantee the entire of Europe, because fuel actually costs money over here. They don't just give it to us.
They
seem to do in America. It's not anywhere near. And so,
my latest.
Go on.
Sorry.
Well, I was just going to say cable. Same way winging dominates foiling. Cable dominates wakeboarding in Europe, and you're not going to foil behind a cable, because I think I'd slap you if somebody suggested it. It's pointless. There's not much point at all. You wouldn't do so well on the campus.
Learning to foil could be a good vehicle for just the straight out first session. Could be actually really good.
So I know the guys on the system twos are teaching foiling, and it works perfectly. I don't doubt that at all. But after that, you know, you have to want to take that somewhere. You have to go to a system two, and you need to go, I want to learn to foil because I'm going to do this.
There's definitely a reason for that. Yeah.
You say that, but just before we wrap up the wake bit, I did make a bit of a prediction the other week, and it came true on, or at least maybe my Instagram feed was listening to me, as people say that the apps do. I was predicting when somebody's going to actually stop wake foiling without the rope and actually get the rope again and start doing some air chair style railies or backflips, but stood on the foil. And then literally a week later on Instagram, I actually saw somebody attempting exactly that, and the crashes were brutal, but someone's going
to
do it.
Can you say hi, Jade? Come and say hi. My 5-year-old just come to say good morning. Nope. Yep, we've got to come and have a come and
we've
come
got
and
a bonus guest on the GSP.
No, I'm shy now.
Save your F words.
So, Jade, what do you think of that?
She loves it. She loves it. It's red. It's red, isn't it? Yeah, come watch it. Was it with me? No, she's off.
Do you like the stripe?
She's off now. She's getting bored. She wants to go do something.
Where are you actually staying, Naomi? I want to have a look on a map because I don't know.
Kuau. So there's a little spot here where you can jump into the ocean.
Sorry. How many vowels are in that one? Which
K-U-A-U.
K-U-A-U. All right, I'll have a little look afterwards.
There's no three L's at the end.
It's a magical little spot, to be honest. We're very lucky, very appreciative of, you know, having the opportunity. I used to come here on the smell of an oily rag, sleep in my board bag down at Kanaha, where there's a decent homeless community. I used to hang out down there back in the kiting days, go kite at Kite Beach, and, you know, Watch Lou Wayman and Fanny Issa absolutely ripping, and you know, aspire to try not to get ragdolled with my kite.
Are they still around?
Lou Wayman's still around. He's still like a talented, crazy local guy that lives up in the bush and goes surfing and does his thing, you know. But yeah,
I hear rumors that he's still regularly trying to get people to start more kite brands.
Probably. I mean, you know, the guy's incredibly talented. It's crazy how things, you know, can happen and you know, come and go and all that sort of thing. Hold on a second. Jade. No, she wants to watch a TV show.
Oh, right.
She doesn't want to watch us talking. I invited her to that.
Shall I do some quick fire silly questions to end then?
Yeah, Philly? You crack on, mate. You crack on.
Thoughts on foiling bicycles?
Oh, fuck's sake.
I actually kind of enjoy riding them, but...
You've had a go.
I've had a go. It's good exercise, right? Like, I do like exercise. So exercise on the water, even better. But, yeah, they're a weird old thing. Will they become a thing? I don't know. They're quite big bits of kit. So, yeah.
Fucking hope not.
Big, but quite big and complicated. But, hey, if people want to do it, like, all power to them. Go do it.
Did you see the guy do the backflip on the e-foil strapped in massive bindings?
Yeah.
Those poor knees.
On e-foils, I mean, good. Yeah, good luck with your knees on that one. But hey, it takes all sorts, right? Like, I think it's great. If people want to push, hey, if you want to go foil on a bike, I mean, the Aqua Skipper's been around for forever, jumping up and down on that thing, but it sank, you know, when you stop foiling. I mean, why not?
The question I have, would you be as complimentary of these disciplines if we weren't recording?
Oh, no, that's the funny thing. No, the funny thing is I actually love anything. I'm kind of crazy. I like to try anything, right? Like, I will actually try anything on this planet, right? So that's, I just love, like, just, hey, if people want to do something crazy and out there, all power to them. Good on you. I love to watch it. Hey, I'm not going to be trying backflips on an e-foil, but I love to watch that.
Somebody else should.
Yeah, damn it, I'm stoked that they did. It fucking made me smile.
Lager, IPA, spirits, or a non-alcoholic vegan kombucha?
All of the above.
Fantastic. And then another one that was sent in from a friend that he'd be disappointed if we didn't ask. And again, I'll read it word for word. A lot of people describe
That's so we don't blame you.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of people describe you as high functioning, but how does Army Armstrong chill out? With a bubble bath or free-flowing jazz or something else?
Definitely out in the water, right? Like, that's always have my best ideas when I'm actually out in the water. It could be sailing. Could be sailing with my dad. It could be, you know, mostly now if I'm out on the water, yep, I'm on a foil. That's, you know, that's a big, decent part of the job. Someone's got to crash test this gear. And so, yeah, I really enjoy trying to break the gear, actually. If I, you know, not bash it, I do bash it on rocks and jump up and down on it a fair bit as well, but actually just using it and landing jumps and just riding it and pushing the gear. And you always have your best thoughts out on the water. It's, you know, nothing better. So, yeah, out on the water, that's my chill time.
That's reminded me. I don't know whether you've seen it, Freddie. I particularly enjoyed your little foil sanding video with Real Water Sports and talking of bashing things with rocks. Was that scripted and was that actually theirs?
No, I was like, Matt was like, oh, you got to shoot the sanding video. I'm like, okay, cool, let's do it. Hang on a sec. I've just got to go get a rock. And we did it. It was a bit of a joke because we did a session and we dragged them to New Zealand and went for a session last year. And his tail was making a bit of a hum, and so I ground it on a rock on the beach to stop it whistling for him. And it's been he was making a, you know, Instagram video with his GoPro or whatever, and so that got on there, and it was quite a funny little thing that he put on. And so we had this running joke, and so he thought I was going to try and sand it with the rock. He didn't know what I was going to use the rock for.
Have you seen this, Freddie?
No, I don't think I've seen it. Let's have a look.
Army's doing this, like, how to repair your foil video. And these apps.
Yeah, so he dug out a brand new kit out of his shop, and then I just smashed it.
And it's not a light hit either. He literally just whacked this wing with a rock, and you can see the section like chip off.
Oh god! Oh. I'll have a look. I shall definitely have a look.
Nah, it was a good bit of humour. Matt was like, "Yeah!"
That did make me chuckle.
Are there any plans at all, Army, on coming to the UK? Are you doing anything in Europe, or did we just fuck this side of the world and leave it alone?
Yeah, well, for sure. I mean, Tris is doing a great job for us down there in Weymouth, and I was there last year. We had the Sail GP was on, and that was the first event that we were involved with the Sail GP Inspire program, and we've given those guys a whole truckload of gear. Literally, is a truckload of gear. They travel around the world with them, and they get the youth. Sailing youth from all around the world get to experience winging, which is awesome, and they have their WASP program as well. and they're sailing dinghies, and they have the wing foiling, and the kids all get to try a bit of both during the week. So I was there for that down in Plymouth, and that was epic. Then I went up and hung out with Tris, and I was blown away. It's actually, it's the first time I've been back in UK since I left when I was 6 months old, and I was blown away, actually, by how beautiful that whole coastline was. It was epic. We had such a good time. And we had a session with Tris and the crew.
For at least a week a year. It's pretty good over here.
As long as you go west of where Tris is.
Well, maybe we got super lucky. The weather was warm. It was sunny. It was windy. It was like, we had the session on the outer coast of Weymouth, which has a name which I can't remember. But we went and took a boat out, went way out off the point there. And there's this wind against tide spot. I'm like, it's as good as Hawaii. The water was blue. It was sunny. It was warm. And we were riding head-high bumps. I was like, this is epic. That's my experience in the UK. So far, 10 out of 10. I'll be back.
Well, yeah. As if you are coming back, give us a shout. It'd be great to have a proper catch-up. Tris has actually offered to... I don't know if the offer's still valid, actually, because I haven't spoken to him about it for a little while. But Liam and I really want to get into the downwind side of things, but neither of us... I've sold out of all the access boards that we tried to get in, or we got in, and then they went straight out. And the apple trees are a little while off, so I'm going to get one of the apple trees that we do. And Tris has offered us one of your... Is it 7.7, the 120?
Yep. Something like that, yeah.
That'd be the right sort of size to start on.
So he's offered us one of those.
I mean, downwinding, if you haven't done any supping, I mean, maybe you've done some stand-up paddling.
We're actually, we're level one stand-up paddleboarding instructors, aren't we? Extremely,
right on.
Extremely proficient.
Yeah, we're comfortable.
easy then.
I know which way round to hold the paddle.
Okay, perfect. You're all good then. You're all good. If you've done that, well, then beauty, you have to go downwinding. And that spot outside Weymouth that Tris has got there is actually epic for it, right?
Yeah, so, the guys, that's one of the spots that they are doing a little bit off.
Yeah.
That's one of the two spots in the UK that people are actually downwinding in properly. Now, I say that, maybe a little bit more.
Yeah, well, their spot is epic. So you can walk down, they probably do a run. There's a little track you can walk down by the castle and go out, and then you can buzz down the coast there and come back in the harbour, I guess. But just, it's so fun downwinding. If you've got the right spot, you need a spot where you've got bumps from the beginning to the end, ideally, so you don't have to paddle yourself in too far. You know, that can become a mission.
Well, hopefully we'll get there. It's taking, what are we on now, 12 months of talking about it, Lee?
Yeah, I think I'm less motivated now than I was at the beginning.
Well, get your board and foil set up and go out and catch some micro bumps. Like, go get some really small waves. But something, I'll just give you one bit of advice, take a very big foil when you're starting off. So,
couple of chats with Casey and Wilmot, and we know what to do now because we've spoken to James Casey.
Yeah, there you go, easy. Yeah, no, that's right. No, it's easy. Just look at James and you figured it out. He's pretty good at it.
Freddie interrupted there. I want whatever advice we can get, Army. Tell me.
On our stuff, hey, the MA 1750 would be the place to start, or the APF 1675 that's coming out. Armstrong pump foil 1675 or 1880. Those things coming out any day. And they've got much lower stall speed than any foils we've done, and possibly as low as anything that exists. That was the goal anyway. So you can almost be stopped and that thing will still foil. So they're very easy to paddle up onto foil.
We'll have one of those.
Perfect.
As well, please, Tris. Thank you.
We'll send one out ASAP.
I'll message Tris tomorrow.
Epic.
Right, the golden question, and we'll let you enjoy your day because it's morning for you. If you were to have your dream setup, but none of it could be Armstrong, Army, what sort of staff are you going to pick? We'll go with winging, seeing as that was your number one desert island discipline.
A winging setup. I would probably, if it's a desert island, is it light wind or strong wind?
You're stuck in an island, so it's got to be a decent breeze at least, doesn't it?
Got to be a vaguely decent breeze. Decent breeze. I'd probably go for the Dacron duotone unit. I'd go for probably a 5-meter-ish. I'd go a KT board for sure.
Interesting.
Ooh, that's cool.
And custom from Maui, though.
I'm trying to figure out what he's insinuating by that, Freddie.
And well, I'd we'll go... ask Keith. Foil. That's so hard.
Is that because there's a lot of other good stuff, or you think it's all rubbish?
Yeah, no, there's actually five foils out there I'd probably go.
All right, we'll give them all props then. That's fair.
Can you tell us all five? Because we diss a lot of stuff, and it would be really nice to, yeah.
We get told off for narrowing what we're aware of.
Right,
so.
Okay. Well, Takuma, just because it's so interesting with their Kajira stuff. I go the Axis just because I need to try one more. So probably an ART 899 for me, something like that. Or maybe the new ones, which I don't even know what they're calling them.
Pro.
The newest Axis that's the right size for me to try. And yeah, I would actually like to try the latest Slingshot with their new carbon rig that they're about to put out. That'd be good. And then a Lift. A Lift HAX 110.
That's another one. Again, we don't see masses of Lift in the UK over here. There's obviously quite a big contingency over it, especially where you are right now.
Well, is it manufactured on Puerto Rico?
Yeah, maybe.
Developed there.
Definitely manufacture some stuff in China as well, so.
Right.
Yeah, they definitely do their R&D over there. Where it's all manufactured, I'm not going to say what other people do, don't I? But, the Lift gear's got great glide for its size, right? So whenever you can get on a smaller foil, then it's got a bigger range, like maybe a lower stall speed for a smaller foil, it's going to be a win because you're going to be able to throw it around more easily. So, you know, there's pros and cons with everything. I mean, the big thing with the MA is, I mean, I would definitely have an MA though. I've got to have my MA with me because the thing is, there isn't a foil that you can put in and out of the water like that thing. So I just love how you can put that out of the water whenever you want. That's the big thing we worked on with that. And I struggle actually on winging with any foil that doesn't do that now because I just like to put the foil out of the water all the time.
Well, that is the first actual answer to that question that we've ever actually fucking had. It's been painstaking. And when Rich said to Liam, oh, you ought to ask him that again, I'm thinking, I'm fucking done with this question because, I haven't tried anything else and I don't know what other people may... Oh, fuck off. It was just getting so annoying. So the fact that you can actually answer a question...
I would like to have more time to try more gear, to be honest, but there's only a certain amount of time in the day and I've got too much of my own gear to bloody
tear. Yeah, exactly. Wouldn't we all? But no, thank you for that answer. That is, I appreciate hearing that, let's say.
No, bloody no. And it is a beautiful thing. Like there are definitely 10 brands out there, what I consider making great gear, you know. So, hey, if you're getting into the sport right now, you almost can't go wrong unless you get something that costs you next to nothing. You know, so then it might be hard to ride and not do what you want it to do. So, yeah.
Cool.
Well, thank you, Army.
Thank you very much.
Hey, no worries, guys. Thank you so much for your time and effort. Sorry I was a little bit late. I'm famously late, actually. So, sorry you're not unique.
I've been great to chat to you. Great to chat through Kit. We'll say our fake goodbyes now because we're about to, finish it and then we'll actually finish it a minute later. Is that how we're doing it?
Something like that. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Aloha, guys. Thank you so much. That was fun.
There you go.
Nice to meet you.
So there you go. There you have it. Hope everyone enjoyed that. I know we did, as I mentioned. Since recording this, we've actually sat down and recorded the next episode of the Wang Lords trilogy. Rich, Liam and I sat down at the weekend after a bit of a session down at Bantham and discussed all things... Well, Army and everything else that's been going on. I did have a quick go on this new XPS wing of Armstrong's as well, and it is indeed very, very good. So look out for that one next week. Obviously, we are being a little bit slack on the old Monday morning releases, as you might have seen, but there's a lot going on for both Liam and myself outside of this podcast, because funnily enough, it's not priority number one. So look out for that one. If you haven't already, have a look back. I mean, this is episode 38, so there's a shitload that you've missed if you haven't. If this is the first, for instance, that you've listened to. If you have, welcome to the podcast. hopefully you enjoyed what we've just listened to. But yeah, have a look back. There's hours and hours and hours of bollocks, basically, on audio, so please have a listen through that. Follow us on Instagram, follow us on Facebook, whatever it is you do. If you could rate us 5 stars on Spotify, that'd be amazing. I think it's pretty good for us in the long run. Yeah, this is the one worth mentioning. We did actually record this with a new program instead of using Google Meet or Zoom or anything like that, which we've not really enjoyed using because it ruins the audio and we've got to do everything separate. Anyway, long story. We might actually have some video from this one, which I think we'll try and put up on YouTube. We get annoyed watching the likes of the young Aussie lads at the Foil Project, who are very, very good with the whole social media. I get quite jealous of those guys. So we're trying to copy them to a certain degree, because YouTube's the one to be on. So keep an eye on that one, I guess. Look out for a YouTube channel coming in the future. Hope we get some swell. Hope we get some wind. There's not much going on in the UK at the moment, just a lot of rain. And yeah, I hope everyone's good. We'll see you soon.